We're going to do the resolutions first because it's session night and I don't want to get stuck with that, so hopefully we can get through them pretty quickly. Resolution number 11, requesting enactment of Senate bill and Assembly bill for hotel and motel occupancy tax. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it for discussion.
Second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Discussion?
We have that special committee. We've only had one meeting. Hopefully the next meeting is the first real meeting. So I was looking for a postponement through today into next month to give us a couple more of those.
I move we postpone it for next month.
I'll second it to postpone it to next month.
Any discussion?
Eve, I think, wanted to say something.
Hi, thanks. There was just a couple of things. Legislator Maloney said, I noticed that, I don't know if you've already seen, one is a possible typo. In the last paragraph before the resolve, you referred to a hotel or motel when I think you mean to refer to short-term rental in the second caveat of a permanent residence.
If I could. I don't have it in front of me that very well may could be, but none of that language really matters. We've had our first special committee meeting or a subcommittee. We're going to have another, and we're actually going over. I mean, this is going to be rewritten, so I wouldn't be too worried about typos. We're settling on a percentage and whether we're going to split.
When you have that, it would just be interesting to get feedback when you do come back on the our capacity to distinguish a permanent residence in something like an Airbnb software. Like, there's the sum of whether we're even going to be allowed to. And I'm not asking for an answer now. I'm just saying that when you do go back, that would be something that, if you haven't talked about, would be useful to know.
We have.
Thank you. Any other discussion? All right. So, all those in favor of postponing?
Aye.
Maybe on a second. Post. All right, so carry. 168, authorizing one-term reimbursement for Ulster County 2021. Can I have a motion?
Do you want to postpone it? Or?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind making a comment on
okay,
it.
Okay, so I'll make a motion for discussion then.
I'll second.
And then I will be discussion. Asking for a postponement. I think, you know, it's a different approach. One, I think, actually brings real, tangible help to a large portion of the county, and like I keep saying, had we had a time machine and gone back and properly, which it's nobody's fault, most counties I think were under, but underestimating if we would have appropriately estimated what the sales tax was going to be, we would have taken this exact amount of money less from the property taxpayer. So I think it's during a tough time with the inflation and everything else going on. I hope people really consider this. And if you're going to be a yes on the gas tax, with I think some greater issues on getting the money into the pockets of the people and the residents we want to, and not just giving gas stations the money, I think this would be a way to do it. So I hope people continue to talk to me and we find our way to 12 votes or some kind of a, you know, I talked to Ken about maybe 20-30%, you know, reasonable amount. So I'll continue to talk, but I'm looking for a vote next month. But I think we need to continue to talk and debate this.
Other discussion, Sarah.
I just want to add to what you were saying, Joe. I'd love to have a broader discussion actually about property tax and see if what we might be able to do to ensure that the people are able to pay the most, considering their total wealth, are actually doing so, and those that have the least ability to pay are doing so as well. So I'm not sure what's within our legal right to do as a county, but I'd love to look at this very broadly. So look forward to the discussion. Thank you.
On that real quick, I mean, I would like to explore. I don't know the legalities of it. I have a call into Chris on if we were to do something like this, possibly excluding anyone that owns a house over 300,000 or 500,000 that valued, maybe taking rental properties off of that list. It'd be part of the discussion, especially if it was something we find out we can do. But it kind of speaks to a little bit of what you're saying.
All right. Other discussion? All those in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Brian? Legislator Walter?
I'll make a motion to postpone.
I'll second it.
Oh,
we didn't do
sorry.
That.
Sorry. I'm just there. Wrong. Second by Fabiano. All those in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. Resolution 169. Electing a cents per gallon rate of sales compensating use of tax on motor fuel and diesel motor fuel.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second. I'll second Mariano. It. Discussion?
To me, I just want to say I think that this is I think this is less about giving people a break at the pump and more about the county not making a killing off of the high cost of motor fuel. We're not really taking away from ourselves anything that we weren't realizing, you know, a year and a half ago. All it is a boon to the county based on, you know, the fact that, you know, fuel prices have gone up so much. It's a no-brainer.
Legislator Walter?
Yeah, sorry, I just had on mute. So I can get more into this discussion. I do not support this at all. I think that there are several concerns I have. One is a lot of things have become more expensive in COVID. Food has become more expensive. Tomatoes have gone up 50%. We're not subsidizing the farmers. We're not making, you know, we're not dealing with those kinds of things. Gas is not the only thing impacted during this time. And I absolutely would be more concerned about taking care of those people who have trouble getting healthy fruits and vegetables. I think also this is, to me, a subsidy of the oil companies. And it also is, it's fine with me to discourage single driving. Right now, about 75% of our people drive alone to work. We have about 2% who use public transportation to get to work. If this is something that motivates people to think of alternatives, carpooling, public transportation, then I think that that would be great. But I think that there's a lot of costs that have gone up in the last year or so and that are far more important to me and to people of Ulster County, including building material and food and really the everyday kinds of supplies. And that's where I think, you know, we're not going to focus on those things, and I don't see why we're focusing on oil. So I can't see any good reason for supporting this resolution at this time.
You're first, and then we'll go to Ray Ross second.
You know, when you talk about deterrence, I think $3.75 is more or less as much of a deterrent as $4. So that wasn't an issue of mine. My biggest issue is that there's really no evidence out there that when this has ever been done, that it's passed along to the consumer. I think most of these gas stations are 6 weeks to 2 months out on filling their massive tanks. I watch gas stations in my own neighborhood raising gas prices 3 and 4 times in one day. That means that they're going off of the barrel price. You also go around the county and see, so it's not going to be an immediate pass along anyways, even if they were going to be ethical and pass it along. There's no legal jurisdictional enforcement that we have that we can require them to or prove that they're not putting it on, passing it along. And we've already seen gas stations around the county 20 to 30 cents off of each other. So the idea that this somehow is just going to magically reduce the price, when I first heard it, I was definitely leaning yes. I had discussions. I let the executives branch know. I let some of my colleagues know. The more I look into this, the more I read, the more I research, this is really putting the majority of this money in the gas station's pockets. And I just think it's easy and it sounds good. So why not do it, I guess, is what I think sometimes happens in politics. But that's sad, because I think we really should be looking for ways to get, to try to find some relief for our constituents. And I think it's going to take a little more work, a little more diligence, a little more creativity. But this is not the way. So it's not, I consider myself to be very environmental. It's not, what's holding me back is not the idea of reversing course on an overall, you know, environmental approach that we kind of have these days, which is not making it easy to use gas and not making it a priority not to use gas. So this kind of goes against that. I'm not worried about that for 6 months, and I think the gas price is already high enough to do that. But I just don't think much, if at all, or any of that money is going to go where we want it to go. And I think if you're really honest and you really take a look and you read and you look at what's been done in other places when they've attempted this, that you find yourself giving money to big oil.
Thanks. I actually respect what Legislator Maloney believes on this. I totally understand where he's coming from. I wish that there was more we could do to ensure that the point of sale is going to indicate the reduction in the gas tax. I have hope that it will. My point is that we need to do what we can, and this is what we can do. If we could do more, I would. I'm actually not opposed to his other resolution, either, if we could find a way to properly do it and legally do it and not make Bert tear the rest of his hair out. I just, listening to Legislator Walter's comments, I've just never heard such an out of touch statement, that we should keep high gas taxes because it's going to discourage people, it's going to encourage people to use public transit. I mean, I can tell you that the one piece of public transit that comes to my district, the 13th district, every day is at 7:30 in the morning. It goes to Kingston and then comes back at 4:30 in the afternoon. I don't know what jobs here in Kingston that people could come to and use public transportation to go to Kingston. I can tell you it's certainly not going to be between the hours of 7:30 and 4:30. It also doesn't account for the 45-minute, each way trip. What I will say is that everything that Legislator Walter talked about, fruits and vegetables and groceries and everything else that's gone up, all that stuff gets transported on trucks and trains and planes, which I know that we've used the word gas a couple of times. Legislator Walter used it a couple of times in her comments. This isn't just a tax on gas, it's a tax on fuel too. And, diesel fuel is what's used in trucks and trains, and, jet fuel is what's used in planes. All that stuff gets taxed too. Fuel is the one thing that raises the price of everything. It's why inflation rises so rapidly when gas prices and fuel prices are so high. So to say that, that we shouldn't do this because we should encourage people to carpool and use public transit, and we should focus on the things that, everybody uses and everybody needs, the cost of fuel raises the price of all that other stuff. This is the one little thing that we can do, and I think it's the least we can do for our constituents. Thank you.
Did you?
Yeah.
Legislator Nolan and then Legislator Walter.
Yeah. I do agree that we should look for every opportunity to provide relief that we can at this point, but fuel costs have gone up by huge amounts relatively, $1, $2, and it may go up even higher. So I support the notion that increase in fuel price reflects to the consumer how much these fossil fuels are costing our communities, our society, and our environment. But I don't think we need to add on a tax that is already being collected at those lower rates. So I think we have the chance here to let the increase in fuel cost speak for itself and provide a little relief where we can. People are hurting, and this is just a little bit, but it is something we can do. So let's do this. Let's look for opportunities. Maybe we need to have more frequent sales tax-free days on sale of clothing and right. things that we do periodically. Let's look for ways to provide this relief. And let's continue, as this county has been a leader in doing, in funding public transit, electrification of our transit system, and other ways to protect the environment with the county's funds that we do take in.
Thank you. Legislator Walter.
Thank you. I think it's very uninformed to assume that the cost of fuel does not impact a person's decision on how to utilize that fuel, and that high costs do not inspire more eco-friendly approaches. That's to not think that that's true is actually is ignorant in many ways. I would say that to me, and this is also like a low-hanging fruit. These are the signs that are up all over the place, so people see and talk about what these prices are. But again, we have people who are very poor in our communities who are struggling to put healthy food on their plates. For $3 million, we can add more buses. We can put more of the on-call buses. We can increase that access to people. Most of the people here in our county drive less than a half an hour anyway to work, so it would be perfectly reasonable to be able to add a bus system that helps meet their needs or otherwise. But again, it is absolutely incorrect to say that higher prices for gas doesn't change behavior in terms of utilization of gas. Just like when you do sales tax reductions, it increases behaviors towards purchasing.
Thank you, Legislator Cahill, then Maloney, then Herner, then Ron.
Thank you. Just a couple of things. One is, you know, when I speak to my constituents and my coworkers and, you know, people that I run into regularly, that's one of the things they talk about, is the price of gasoline. I work at IBM, June 1st. We're going to be going back to full on time, which means that in my department alone, there'll be six people driving from different portions of Ulster County into Poughkeepsie every day, right? And those six people will benefit from this, right? And you know, anybody that's traveled 9W knows that there is a mass exodus between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. every single day of people from Ulster County into Dutchess County going to work. So yeah, you know, I wish there was public transportation. I would take it. I wish there was public transportation, you know, for people who live even closer to Highland, in Highland and town of Lloyd or Marlborough, to go into Poughkeepsie IBM plant, but there's not, you know. So, you know, they have to get to work, and this is a benefit to folks who have to travel to Poughkeepsie to go to work. Dutchess County overall, the hospitals employ a lot of people, most of the county. IBM employs a lot of people. There are people all over Dutchess County that would benefit from that. People who work in Dutchess County live in Ulster County. That's one thing. The other thing is I, you know, am 100% in agreement that we should be doing all we can to discourage people from driving, right? And Ulster County is a leader in New York State, right? We are a leader in providing green transportation. We're a leader in our green initiatives from top to bottom, soup to nuts. And to think that this in some way will detract from that, I think is a kind of a mistake. I don't think that that's the intent of it. And I don't think that it will be a result of you know, reducing the sales tax on gasoline for 6 months, right? I just think that what it does do is give the people who do want to buy that overpriced tomato a little bit more of an ability to do that, right? The people who may want to go on vacation, it might help them take that vacation, right? I mean, I know that it's not going to solve the world's problems, but we don't have a lot of latitude when it comes to this. And this is one of the things that we can do. So with that, you know, I absolutely support this.
Thank you. Could you say more?
Yeah, you know, I think what Ken was trying to say before is what makes me cringe sometimes is when you hear somebody say, especially an elected official, say, you know, I'm not worried about gas prices. You know, maybe, you know, everyone should just buy a Prius, right? The elitist, out-of-touch approach, I think, is what Ken was trying to speak to, that this is, you know, it's you know, there are people suffering that don't have the option to take the bus. He spoke to, there's not even really buses that run to your district. So it's, if I thought that this was going to lower gas prices 25 cents, I'd be a happy yes. What we're forgetting here is there's no evidence that even a penny is going to make it to the consumer. There's no evidence of it. And if 2 or 3 cents reach there, I don't know if spending $3 million to save people, you know, a total of $3.47 over a 6 month period is, and it's unquantifiable, but what we can see is data that says we've done it, it doesn't work, they put it in their pocket. That's why ultimately I'm a no. I understand everybody's points, but I'm a no because it doesn't look like it's gonna work. Like I said, to team up with the state, and if it was going to be 25 cents a gallon, I really believed it. I would. I even spoke to Chris Kelly. I hate promoting businesses on our social media. I hate seeing a private business's name on our county website. but this is where I talked to you about the other day. Can we use our social media to actually put the best gas prices and the locations on social media to kind of pressure, if we do this, to pressure these gas stations to keep their prices down? I mean, it'd be something, but there's really, it didn't look like it was something we could do. There's nothing for me that's going to make, that I've seen, and I'm still waiting to hear it. We're debating. I haven't heard anyone show me how we're going to be like some, you know, like nobody's ever been able to do, and make the gas stations pass it along and not do their own kind of, you know, legal but quiet price fixing. So I do have one question. If it does pass, and it might, I think we're close on this either way. Did we officially add the sunset date? And did we take the thruway stops out of it? And or should we have a discussion about that? Because we should probably take our three, we have three thruway stops. I think I'd like to see them be taken out of this. But what are our thoughts on that? And is the sunset date, has it been amended for an actual date when this sunsets? Because there wasn't one in there. Am I wrong about that?
We'll come back to that. I'll give the answer, but let me go back to Mr. Erner and then Ronk and then.
I can answer the sunset question.
All right. Please go ahead.
No, please. No, you first. Okay. You haven't spoken yet.
So if we reduce the tax by, let's say, 8 cents a gallon on a $4 per gallon purchase, because we're setting it up as $2, so then on a 20 gallon fill up, that's $1.60 on what you're paying $80 for right now. $1.60 could get you one ride on the bus if there's a bus, but if not, it's $1.60 out of $80. Mm-hmm. It's a very small proportion of that. So I'd like to see us put some pressure on our higher ups, like on the state and federal level, and hold some of these crazy high profiting oil companies to account, just like we need to do with Central Hudson. I won't get into that here. We need to consume less gas, but that needs to start with those who use the most first. That's not poor and working people, of course. So, again, I have concerns with this about how it actually gets the people who need it most. And if we can cover everyone who needs it and some people who don't, I'd be okay mm-hmm. with that if we knew that that was going to happen. But I'm not. I don't know that that's going to happen. and. I was wondering, like you mentioned, Joe, could we exempt the thruway stations? You're going to tell us if we can or not, but
I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to tell you I don't think you can.
Yeah,
but,
that's what I had heard.
You know, it's my understanding that it's a, you know, it's across the board. We can't pick and choose who we levy taxes on, who we don't right. like that. It's got to be on everybody or nobody.
And I also thought that, you know, we could exempt, we could do it for 87 and not for the higher grades, especially if they have ethanol in it, which is destroying engines and making things not last as long. Like, that's a whole other discussion we could have, but apparently we can't do that either. That's not permitted. So, I hear Eve on the cost of food. I hear you, Joe, on various other environmental concerns, and Ken, like, I want to bring buses to every county road. I think every county road that we pay to maintain and plow, like, we should have some kind of transit. Maybe not a bus, but we need some solution for other people to be able to get around and not always have to drive their car, because that's not affordable for all of us, ultimately. And I appreciate your comment, Kathy, about relief wherever possible, and Brian, like, transit to Dutchess, and yeah, we need more than just the KPL. I'd love to talk with our neighboring counties, because we send a lot of buses to other counties, and they're not sending buses to our county, so maybe Dutchess, Orange, and others could step it up a little there. But if this passes here and comes to the floor at this point, I'm a no. So thank you.
Sir Robert?
I mean, talking about public transit, there's nothing I'd like better than to, you know, build a time machine and go back and stop Eisenhower from envisioning the interstate system, because that was really the moment when our society went from a, you know, possible public transit right. network like the rest of the world into interstates, where everyone had their own car. You know, but I don't have that particular DeLorean in my garage. but you know, what I do know is that Ulster County is the geographic size of Rhode Island, and the idea of an interconnected transit system where everybody can get everywhere they want to go, I think is unreasonable. I'll tell you, I've got a constituent, you know, it's actually Tracy's constituent, but she reached out to me, knows me from town, and you know, she's got senior citizens who need to go to the doctor's office. Well, we can't bring them in UCAT to the doctor's office because, you know, my district borders Orange County on 3.5 sides, and so does, you know, my neighboring district, Tracy's district borders Orange County on one side. And a lot of our services are in Orange County just because of proximity. You know, we don't all have the Tesla or Prius or whatever to be able to, you know, take our, you know, our self to Orange County, and some of those folks don't even have, you know, a fossil fuel, evil fossil fuel burning car to take to Orange County to go to the doctor. You know, but UCAT can't take them there. We got, you know, we can't be taking every person to every doctor in Orange County, or Ulster County or Greene County or Sullivan County. We can't bring everyone to everywhere they need to go. You really need a vehicle in this county the way it's currently set up. You know, I believe that the ignorant comment was directed at me, so I'll address that. I don't think that gas prices don't have some sort of a discouraging factor on, you know, on what kind of car we choose to drive. But it is, as I believe Legislator Maloney pointed out, elitist to think that everybody who, you know, is hurt by high gas prices then can then go out and afford to have a hybrid or a Tesla or any of these other types of vehicles. A lot of people are, you know, are relegated to buying the, you know, 1996 Jeep off the side of the road. I'll tell you, that's what a lot of my constituents have to do to be able to afford transportation. You know, so really, you know, I believe that the high gas prices are punishing, you know, the lower working class more than the higher Tesla driving class. You know, but again, I'm just here. I like Brian Cahill. You know, Legislator Cahill, have been hearing from my constituents over and over again to the high cost of gas prices, and this is the one thing that we can do. I will tell you this, you know, to Legislator Maloney's points that he's made, you know, if I didn't think that, you know, if we kept the high, you know, tax, if I didn't think that it was going to go into the general fund and possibly pay for another six-figure employee over across the hall, you know, I might be in favor of leaving it there if there was a way that we could, you know, pass that savings back onto the taxpayers. But I don't see that happening. I see it getting swallowed up into the county budget and creating more jobs and more bureaucracy, like it has, you know, for the last couple of years. You know, we spent years and years reducing bureaucracy, and now we're increasing it. You know, this is my way of giving a little bit of the benefit back to the people of the county, and it's my hope that it gets to them. I agree with Joe. If we could give it back in a better way, I would, but I don't see that happening.
The sunset clause.
Oh yeah, the sunset clause hasn't passed yet. Thanks, Dean. The sunset clause hasn't been added yet. It we could make an amendment in this committee, but that's not binding because you can't amend on the floor. I'm sorry, you can't amend in committee the night of the meeting. So I'd be more than happy just to have it happen on the floor rather than here personally. I don't support a sunset. I think that, you know, the legislature could be its own sunset. If it turns out that gas prices reduce and we want to make a change, we can make a change just like we're doing now. I think that it's better to have the legislature have to act than, you know, to eliminate it than the legislature have to act to extend it.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the point of how we're able to levy the tax, we're not able to be selective. It's across the board. So we're not able to choose the locations or the level at which it's just collective.
Which
so
makes sense.
The other point of this is we're able to, under current law, stop collecting at $2 or $3. The state just passed within the state budget additional at $4. So those are the three levels which we can stop collecting by a resolution of this type. So that's what's within our authority now. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, just a couple comments that I have is, you know, a lot of people are saying the same things I actually have listed here, but to, you know, the point of that we're trying to help the most vulnerable and the most in need, to me, that's not people with vehicles, that are also the people who are using UCAT currently. And to Ken's point, you're right. I don't want to see it just go into the general fund. I would, if anything, I'm not necessarily in favor of this. A lot of the reasons, like Legislator Maloney said, I just don't believe it's going to get to the user. It'll get to the business. I'd rather see just do an abatement of the fees for UCAT for a period of time and use the money there to offset that. I just don't think it's going to have that much of an impact. I don't think it's going to get to the right people. And it's such a small number. It's just not really that meaningful, I don't believe so. All right. No discussion? All those things?
I mean, just, you know, later on tonight, I'm going to make some comments on the Crisis Stabilization Center about it being too Kingston-centric and the greater Kingston area and the people in the hinterlands get left in the dark, which is my caucus. My caucus lives in probably, other than Legislator Nolan, the most rural areas of the county. You know, and I understand where you're coming from with an abatement from UCAT, but again, you know, the people who are not gonna receive any sort of the benefit of that are the people who, you know, who live in these rural areas that the Republican caucus represents. And quite frankly, you know, I understand that there are some, some areas in the county that are more impoverished than others and have more, you know, people without vehicles and things that you're saying. I can tell you, I can find some real impoverished people in those districts as well that wouldn't see a benefit whatsoever if we did an abatement on the UCAT. You know, this would benefit the whole county, not just smaller parts of it. So that's where I struggle with anything having to do with UCAT. And again, I support every bus purchase that we do. I support all the employees that we employ at UCAT because it does help portions of the county, but not all of them.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Should Gail? Opposed?
Aye.
I oppose.
All right. I'm gonna vote yes just because to get it to the floor, but I'm probably gonna.
I think it gets to the floor with Rita Dean and Brian.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So you can vote no.
Chair Martell, so I'll vote no. We don't have enough for that. Thank you. All right. 180, authorizing the cost and design phase construction for the Gaylorville Bridge.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second it.
Fabiano, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Care? Thank you. Resident 201, increasing employee contribution towards cost of health care. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
Fabiano,
discussion?
As with everything else, I'll look for a postponement. I've even talked to several legislators that I think may eventually support this. Right now, all our rank and file, all our unions that are hired right now are all paying 20% towards their health care premiums and all their bosses, many of them making, you know, $100,000+ a year, paying 10% with much better retirements options as well. And I just think we should all collectively. My wife is a 10-year, 11-year county employee. When she was hired, it was at 15%. Upon the next open enrollment, we'll be going on to my insurance at 20% so I can walk the walk. I think we should have a discussion with the entire county, and as healthcare costs go through the roof, there should be equity here, and we should all be paying 20% towards our healthcare, which would be fair, and we're getting great healthcare. Anyone that's hired in management, you would be hired under 20% healthcare, so we would set the salaries, which I agree with Ken, half the time, especially if it's somebody in the executive wing, is outrageous. I mean, just outrageous, some of these salaries. They're making more here in government than they ever would in the private sector in Ulster County. And that goes for a lot of people at the county right now. And they're all paying less than all the rank and file, everyone working under them. And I think it's time to have a nice, honest conversation. We did this for elected officials. Juan said the other day in the meeting that had he been collecting the county healthcare, that he would definitely be supportive of paying the same amount that all those men and women that have the toughest job in the county, especially the CEOs and the road patrol, that they're all paying 20% upon being hired. So that's what this is about. So, you know, I'll be talking to Phil and some other people. We'll see if we can get 12 on this. But I'll be looking for a postponement until next month.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
I'll second the motion.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Postponement?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Resolution number. Oh, these are forthcoming. Okay. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'll first walk the committee through the tax foreclosure process. I'm going to go with 1 year. We do this for each tax year. As an example, I'm giving you 2019, which we actually had the auction today. So I'll walk you through this process. In 2019, obviously, the town-county bill is sent out. They have till January 31st to pay. After that, it accrues interest and penalties. In May, the town sends out a reminder notice to property owners who are taxes are uncollected. In June, those uncollected taxes are turned over to the county. From there, in July, we sent out a reminder notice to the property owners per New York State real property tax law. And again, these are all in the 2019 tax year. 2019 continues in September. We send out another notice to those uncollected taxes. Again, New York State real property tax law. In November, we file the first delinquent tax list with the county clerk. And we also do an initial title search of the property. And that is in November of that first tax year. The tax remains uncollected. In 2020, we send out a reminder notice to property owners. This isn't required. This is what we do as the county. And this is for all tax years. So if there's a 2018 tax, if there's a 2020 tax, we'll send a reminder out to all taxpayers that they have a delinquent tax. 2021, April, again, we send out another reminder to taxpayers who have uncollected taxes. In June, we update that title search that we did back.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay, no problem. Then there's even more.
No, it's this one.
I can see it now. Thank you.
If you can hold it there, that's fine too. And just go. I can work off that. Good. So in June, we update that title search that we initially did that first tax year, in case there's changes on that title search. In October of 2021, we file a petition of foreclosure, which is required under New York State tax law. What goes out is regular mail of that notice as well as certified notices. For this particular tax year in 2019, we sent out 2,100 certified letters, roughly 657 properties. We send to the owners and those who have publicly recorded interest in terms of those properties. From there, they have 120 days to redeem that property, which is normally mid-February. We also have to advertise those foreclosure eligible properties under New York State property tax law. At that time, we send our first list to the Department of Environment to start reviewing those properties. And that is in October of 2021. In November, we also send the town building inspectors a questionnaire for each property to determine they go out and do research or if they know the properties. On the questionnaire, we ask if it's hazardous or what type of things may, if it's occupied. There's a whole questionnaire that we have sent out. January 2022, the current list of eligible properties. Mind you, people have paying taxes regularly on these, so that list becomes smaller. That list is sent to the Chair of Ways and Means, the County Executive, the County Attorney, and the Planning Department. We also receive the building inspector questionnaires back from the building inspectors in the towns. And properties that we get the certified letters back that are undeliverable, we have to go out and physically post those properties. So folks in real property in my department go out and physically post that notice of foreclosure. Mid-February is that last day to redeem the properties as we work to get the petition to the court. In February, normally we'll get answers that are served to the county attorney. It can go from October to that mid-February date. Those answers are served to the county attorney. It's a civil action delaying the county foreclosure on the property. We also have bankruptcies, on these properties, they are removed from that notice of foreclosure list too. In March, the county attorney prepares the judgment and sends to the court. Anybody who is in contract with us that is current on their contract, those properties are also removed from this notice of foreclosure. After review of the building inspector questionnaires, we actually sent DPW out for questionable properties. Information from the planning department, the Department of Environment, hazardous properties are removed from the foreclosure.
There's never any discussion. Who makes that decision ultimately?
It's pulled by my office. Correct.
So
with review from the county attorney.
You solely make that decision.
With the county attorney, planning department, Department of Environment.
Can you give us some examples of some properties you've done that on over the last couple of years? Some big ones.
Like 71 Grand Avenue, for instance.
Yeah.
That was removed because I had an answer every year.
Yeah.
That was delivered to the county attorney's office.
From?
Delivered to the county, from the owners of that property.
What did they say to you?
It was delivered to the county attorney's office.
What is that?
It's an answer. It's a civil action that basically delays this property from being in auction.
And what was the reason? The ultimate reason
that the county attorney got the answer.
They decided that they weren't going to get foreclosed on. I'm not following. Or did you decide?
You go back a slide.
Okay. So we didn't foreclose.
We had an answer delivered on that property every year since 2015. It was served to the county attorney. The county attorney chose to remove this from the
So it wasn't your decision?
Ultimately, I'm the one who signs this foreclosure notice.
So is it your decision or the county attorney's decision
Both.
To not foreclose?
Both.
So you in tandem?
Correct.
Did you ever discuss it with the county executive or anyone else?
No, county attorney.
So just you and the county attorney decided
protecting
to let this property
the county's
go
best
for
interest.
7 years.
Protecting the county's best interest.
That's the best at 7 years, two people making that decision. Never discussed it even with
the presentation.
Yeah. Just so I'm clear.
This is why I invited him here to talk.
The term answer.
Yes. It's a civil action that's filed with the court.
That's what I wanted to clarify. Correct. So it's a legal proceeding that's going on.
Correct. And it's delivered to the attorney.
Okay. So it's legal gymnastics that are happening year after year.
We could have foreclosed, though.
The county attorney would have to go back and challenge that answer, but it would be after this foreclosure process.
We could have foreclosed, though, ultimately. We could have gone after the property.
Ultimately.
Yeah.
Correct.
And we do. So let finish it, because then I have a lot of questions. Let's finish.
So in April, mid-March to the Friday before auction, after we take ownership, the property owners can buy back the property from Ulster County. I will say this year's auction in our brochure, we had roughly 267 properties. Today we went to auction with about 120. So there's quite a few buybacks. We also had today actually two order to show cause, which again removes it from the auction. Bankruptcy filings would do that as well. We had the auction today, mid-April. May through June, you'll get resolutions from my office to approve those buybacks, give the deeds back to the former owners. June, July, you will approve the properties sold at the auction. August to September, finance office, county attorney, prepare the deeds to transfer the properties to the new owners. That's the process for 1 year of tax. That's it. 1 year.
So now we can ask some questions.
All right,
so that I clarify my own understanding for anybody else. When we talk about an answer being received, that means that there's a legal process that's
going
on.
It's been filed with the court.
And so the court has these papers in front of them, and to do anything other
The county attorney would have to go back. Again, I'm not the attorney. County attorney would have to go back and challenge that answer.
So that becomes an increased intensity of legal action and basically would be a decision of committing the county to further legal, but would be an investment towards potentially a very long and expensive legal process.
Could be, correct.
So I get it, you're using legal language as to the process, and there would be legal a legal process if we wanted to go after that property. Probably pretty similar to a lot of properties we go after, and we choose to go after them. What I'm confused by is how you allow a fully functioning office building that is was built in 83, renovated in 2010, advertising. I have a beautiful brochure here. There, I was there today, people walking in and out. We've allowed them to go $10 million beyond their taxes. Never went after it. If there is a problem with the roof or a structural issue or a mold issue, it's surely worse now than it was in 2014 or 15. My mind is boggled at how somebody can continue to do business. Another unfortunate reality is the people that oversee this property were major donors to the county executive, who you are still the county treasurer of. You, without putting it into your... It most certainly does, because it might have something to do with this process, because all I see is... That's completely unacceptable. I just talked to the chair about this. She's sick to her stomach over some of this.
She's not here.
That's...
I mean, are we going to allow accusations of that?
No, we're going to... No,
he's asking questions.
You should have to answer those questions. This is $10 million of tax dollars with a lot of donations, a lot of confusion around why this is a fully functioning office building. There are similarities to other things that have happened in this county recently with decisions we've made, whether it's Vandale Properties, Westchester Medical, Tech City, the Bank of Greene County. All the same questions are there. And we're losing out on tax dollars. I'm up to $25 million in lost tax dollars to big donors. If somebody's not going
to,
he should answer the question.
If
there's no connection, then there's no connection. But he's got to answer more questions on why we haven't foreclosed on this building at the very least. He can't just say, well, it's the attorney. Well, it is me. It's the attorney. It's $10 million. And it's a building that's still fully functioning and collecting revenue. And it's owned by a billionaire. We didn't even get to that. It's owned by a billionaire. Chris, have you made contact? Have you reached out to find out why this? Can you answer the questions?
Yeah, directed to me and
through the chair to deputy.
You got a lot going on, Legislative Maloney. There's too many ping pongs going at once here. So let me step back for a second and ask the question.
Let's have Chris answer some questions.
Is there a formal policy or statute on how this is all supposed to work? Both. So I understand there's real property
tax law.
And that's a more of a framework.
And then county policy governs the ability to pay back and when. So for the individual property owner, but it is governed by real property tax law.
Understood. But the process of pulling properties or deciding what gets there, is there a policy
county
in
policy?
Writing?
I'd have to defer to the county attorney and the commissioner of finance on that. I'm not the expert in this field.
If we could get an answer on that,
sure.
Because...
Jared, I asked that recently. There is no codified policy. They said they have a procedure, but it's kind of just discretionary.
All right. Yeah. Let me go with Legislator Fabiano first and then Legislator Cahill.
No, the only thing I'm saying is that Legislator Maloney has the right to ask these questions, whether he's accusing or not accusing. I don't see where he was accusing. He's asking. You were the chairman of this campaign and this and that. For him to get out of that chair and walk out that door, only getting little pressure on him for 20 or 30 seconds, it's absurd. He should have stayed there and answered the questions to the best of his ability. And if he had a problem with it, he could have did something the day after. Maybe this is something the Ethics Committee should look at. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's not going to go away. It is definitely not going to go away. Because they think in that room there, whenever they want to skate, they can skate.
All right.
I just have to say that this is not about our administration.
It has nothing to do with you, Chris.
No,
you
it
just
has
got
not,
here.
This is not, the accusation is not against the current county executive. So I want to be clear on that.
Correct.
That's Thank correct. Very true.
Right. And we need to refrain from accusing. Questions are one thing, accusation are another. Mm-hmm. Let's just ask a question. No accusation behind it. So, Legislator Cahill.
Thank you very much. I just want to chime in here a little bit. I've spoken to Deputy Executive Kelly about this, and I reached out to Supervisor Quigley, who is the supervisor for the town where this property is located. He said there were many, many lawsuits back and forth between the county and the property owner trying to reduce the assessment of the building. And as a matter of fact, there's still an open case, as far as I know. But also, Legislator Quigley said he is not opposed to the county foreclosing on this property, because one of the reasons that was discussed was that the county, the town would actually lose money on this because the county isn't making them whole. But Supervisor Quigley, in my conversation, said, you know, that that's why they have a contingency fund. That's why he builds into his contingency fund for situations like this. He would rather see it foreclosed, put on the open market, and let somebody buy it who's going to pay the taxes that are rightfully due on the property. It's 11 years, right, where they haven't paid taxes on that property. And the county taxpayers, right, and town taxpayers to a degree, and a lesser degree than if it was the town taking the hit, have shouldered that burden. And I have, you know, and the reasons, you know, that it's a blighted property, that is one of the nicest office buildings in the county, right? In not the county, I'm sorry, in the town, right? It's very well cared for. It has fresh mulch around all the buildings. There is constant traffic in and out of the building. There's no reason, and as far as I know, and I actually have worked in that building as an IBM employee, I can tell you that the only thing that's in that building was offices and a couple of raised floors for testing computers, right? There was no manufacturing. There's no contamination there that I'm aware of, unless it was there by the farms prior to IBM building there in the 80s. There's no contamination on that site. And how it's even lumped in as a brownfield is what really I question overall. You know, the idea that this is in this resolution at all is a question to me, right? And that's what I would like to challenge and see how we can resolve that. It doesn't belong here. It doesn't belong in using American Recovery Act money to fix something that isn't broken. It's not a brownfield, and it's not blighted. It's not, and it doesn't belong in this package. Thank you.
Before Legislative Maloney goes, question, two of you have both said the same thing. Do we know that what the actual environmental issues are with the property?
So I came to the issue about 2 weeks ago. Chair Bartels asked to do some research on it. So I'm not part of finance, so I'm not part of the foreclosure process. I'm not an attorney. So I'm looking at all the different records. I know that there's a brownfield that borders the property. That was part of the DEC program. It used to be the Myron precast concrete plant. So there is the bordering thing. On some of the inspection notices that came back from the building inspectors, they did flag something about a transformer located on site as a potential hazard. All of those things, though, it means that we have to continue to do the research and then see what the options are to move forward. But I'm getting closer to kind of gathering a decade's worth of paperwork, speaking with people like Legislator Cahill, Supervisor Quigley, just to make sure that we have all the information before we proceed in any action.
And the other question is related, same thing, is does the town of Ulster have inspection program through the building department that goes and inspects commercial properties, whether it's fire inspections or, and do we know if we've gotten that information?
The only information that I've seen thus far, and I'm still doing my research, is the form that Commissioner Golnick sends out, and then they send back answering whether they think there's hazards, whether it's occupied. I don't know about their building code and what they do in terms of inspections.
Got it. Okay.
The roof is noted. I did speak with somebody there. It was noted that the roof needs full replacement. Mm-hmm. I think the overall building space is 310,000 square feet. The roof is about 110. So that it does need a full roof replacement, I was told.
Okay, Legislator Maloney?
We have a legislator that worked in there not too long ago. We have the town supervisor, where normally it's the town that is driving the county to be concerned about something. We have the town of Ulster going, take it. It's 10 years. And if there is roof issues, if there is other issues, we just let this go 7-8 more years, which means if we do take it and we do what we've been doing a lot of these days, is using tax dollars to fix something before handing it off or putting it back on the tax rolls, we may have just cost
the $10 million in back taxes, and we may have cost our taxpayers, our constituents, another $10 or $20 million. And when you're talking about $10 to $30 million and all these question marks, all these alarming facts, whether you want to connect them in a certain way, answers have to be, we owe it to the people. When you're talking about something this big, and I'll just remind everyone, the way I understand it is, you can take a property that has environmental issues. You have the right not to because of a brownfield type issue. So the idea that we didn't for, you know, 8 years, 9 years now, whatever it is, and we're not, and then we're just trying to figure out whether there's a brownfield, it's just completely unacceptable. It's hard. The reason you might want to start going other places and looking for relationships is because it's either a dereliction of duty or some type of a relationship. I don't know what other logical answer that you could come to be sitting where we're sitting. And this is why we've all got elected, not for the easy stuff, not for the high five after the gas tax, for this kind of stuff, and there's way too much of it. I stand by asking some tough questions of a guy that's making $150,000 a year, and we had him in here to talk about three other things. I had piles of other conflicts the same way with an alarming discretionary decision-making rationale behind it. I think we've got to get to the bottom of it. To be honest with you, I had some other questions about some legal things going on with him that I found online. You can go right to the clerk's website and type in his name and find out. I think we really got to take a look at our finance director, what he's been up to, what he's up to, the kind of culture he has going over there. And Chris, you know, through the chair, if I'm totally wrong about everything, just tell me. But am I wrong to question these things? I mean, is that what you were saying before through the chair? Am I wrong to ask these questions when we're talking about this amount of money that's funny to you? It's not funny to our constituents.
Point of order.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about the seriousness of these questions. They're perfect serious. It just, we need to tone it down a little bit. We're all adults here. I understand tensions are high on this because it is a upsetting subject. It really is. This is not the kind of thing you want to uncover, let's say.
So asking questions and receiving answers is really important. When a question is asked and then answered, and then it's asked again and it's answered again, and then it's asked again, and then it's answered again, the next time it's asked, it's not taken as you want to, that we're trying to get the answer to the question. And that's what I saw happen here, is an answer, an answer, and an answer, and then I did hear accusations. And then we started to hear further accusations. So I think we need to be really careful, because asking questions and getting answers is important. When we're dealing with areas that are discretionary and complicated, which these are, and when there are additional issues that come up, like environmental questions, it can be that there is another answer besides a bad judgment or some kind of misfeasance. It could be that elected officials and qualified staff dealing with a complicated situation made a decision that others reflecting on it 10 years later disagree with or think that they could have solved better. So I think our role as legislators, I think asking, is there a policy that helps guide these complicated decisions, is good. Teasing it apart, I thought the presentation was very helpful. We have a 3-year process that allows half of the properties to fall from one category to the other when they're uncomplicated. 3 years for the uncomplicated properties, and half of them change their category. So this is extremely complicated stuff. It has covered by lots of layers of intersecting legal responsibilities. And I'm very happy to look at particular properties or even a list of properties and try to figure them all out. If we do that in a very respectful way that makes it clear that we're collaborators to make the process better. And I appreciate the opportunity to add that context to why somebody could feel like the forum was not allowing a fair exchange of information and then allowing the process to move forward.
Legislator Cahill's next, but just to respond to the one comment there, I don't think in the beginning Legislator Maloney was that out of line. The word answer was literally the word answer, and he just kept repeating that. I even started questioning what that actually meant. It would have been better to have clarified what that meant, and that's why I tried to make sure that I was right, that it was something, meaning a legal proceeding is the answer, not just use the word answer. So I understand the frustration and how that escalated, unfortunately. Legislator Cahill?
Yeah, I just wanted to clear up a couple things. As far as where the Myron site is, that's actually where there's now a small shopping plaza, and ironically, Caramount Medical Facility is built directly on top of where Myron was. Right. And between these buildings and that site are railroad tracks. So we do have that to consider. And again, I think calling this site a brownfield is a stretch, and I would absolutely require proof that there is a real environmental hazard on that parcel before I would accept that as a categorization for that property.
Thank you.
I'd just like to point out we didn't even get to the bonding question of why we're constantly bonding for cars. You could make quite an argument that we've wasted a lot of money over the years. It's interesting to see who the companies are that we're bonding, that we're using to bond. We didn't get to the investment and the decisions that the finance director has made on investments. We could have the same conversations on the bidding process or the lack thereof when we went out to Greene County, how abrupt that was, what other banks in the area, including TD Bank, had said about how fair that process was and what they would have offered us compared. Same questions as far as relationships and donations when it comes to how waiting 5 years to get into the agreement with Airbnb, which costs us about $10 million. You have the same kinds of questions. The finance director made those decisions, those discretionary decisions, cost us a lot of money. Didn't seem to make a lot of sense to many people involved at the time. There was about $75,000 in donations from the Lodging Coalition. There is a problem here. And if the problem is just perception and bad decisions, then let it just be that the problem is a visual that looks bad, but there's nothing there. And then let's just deal with the bad decisions, one after the other after the other. I heard this year quite a debate over giving a raise to our finance director, but I just gotta say, I feel like I'm doing my job questioning a lot of the decisions that are being made. And some of these decisions are so bizarre and so bad for the taxpayer that you start to wonder, is it a dereliction of duty or does it have to do with relationships? It's fair. It's my job to ask these questions. It's hard to do it. Not many people want to, but I'm doing it because it's got to be done, because I see tens of millions of dollars being wasted that could be invested better. We have to do better, and we have to hold the people at the top accountable. We have to. And it's easy to say, point at Washington, D.C. and Albany, like I always say, and say, I'd never put up with that. I'd never look the way on the I'd call that out. When you get there, it's a little different and it's harder to do, but it's got to be done because this can't continue.
All right, so a couple of questions. Do you know if we can inspect a property prior to actually foreclosing and taking ownership of it to have these studies done?
There has to be. So there's a temporary, I think,
temporary incidents of ownership.
Thank you, Council Runk. So that's what we'll be doing on all of the brownfields in terms of doing the phase one, phase two investigations as part of that program.
Okay. And just as a follow-up, I guess, to Mr. Maloney's comment, it does, start from the top unfortunately, we're as negligent as well. If there's no policy in place, that means we, as the policy-making body, didn't make one. So shame on us. And,
absolutely.
We need to now address this and going forward make sure that it's a policy that's comprehensive, it gets to the point, and we avoid any even appearance of impropriety going on, that it's black and white. If a failure occurs and there is no policy, it's a failure on management, not on the employees. And we just need to go forward from here. It's unfortunate that you're right, because the rest of these, there are some questions to answer these as well.
There's got to be a look back, and there's got to be accountability.
Yeah, I would just say that anybody who has questions related to these, please send them in. You're going to be away.
I am.
Yeah. Amber, can we have them send it to you then while Natalie's away?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And there's a larger discussion with, if we're not going to do it, I mean, first of all, we're saying we're worried as a brownfield. We've got people working all over this place for 10 years. But if we're not going to do it, who is? I mean, I am one of those people that feels there should be no discussion. We take it at 36 months, and then we go and deal with whatever it is that's there. Ultimately, it's what we eventually do, and it ends up costing us more in the long run. But our approach should always be to go take it, not leave some brownfield there so we can find out there's a cancer cluster later. I mean, we're the only ones that are going to have the means to do that. If we're not willing to do it, no business is going to do it. We're going to sit there and leach into water and everything else. We need to start going after these properties at 36 months. Enough of the games. That's all I have.
Can I have a motion to adjourn?
We'll give Mark an option. I don't know. That's the last time.
It's been a rough, you're retired old session.
We have time. If you, yeah.
I do pay 20% of my health care, just so you guys know.
You're welcome.
Just an update on the investment. Thanks, Jeff. An update on the investment audit. I wanted to let you guys know that we will be sharing some draft policy updates with you for consideration shortly. But I wanted to just point out the product that we think that we should be looking at. One of them is returning now 56.99 basis points compared to the 25 basis points we're earning with the new $70 million that was moved into a deposit plus account. So we're starting to see that widening spread between the Bank of Green County and other alternatives. I also wanted to mention that we've already earned $7,000 since that move, so I'm happy about that. We're going to put forward a little gas tax calculator based on the work that the deputy controller did back in 2016. We'll probably put it out in the next couple of days. Regardless of what happens with the resolution, we think it would be nice for residents and citizens of Ulster County to be able to understand like what all these different taxes are on gasoline. So we're going to share that. And then I just wanted to let you guys know on UCRA, I forewent the site visit personally given the explosive nature of the comments by the agency in the newspaper, but my staff did attend last Monday. They had a very good working meeting with the staff there, and we have a few questions back out to the agency. We're working towards resolving any questions that we have in writing up our findings. Thanks.
Hey, question for you. Are we allowed to invest with credit unions or only FDIC?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I ask a related question? Is there a way, or should there be a way to, for the county to be able to factor in criteria for banks like individuals do, such as socially responsible qualities of the bank, their investments in fossil fuels, their discrimination policies, other factors that in an individual's portfolio might be called socially responsible investing. Does the county have the ability to make those kinds of judgments, and would it require a policy from the legislature to guide such a thing?
Well, I think that we do have the option to choose whatever depository institutions we want, as long as they fit within general municipal law. And you could use a screening tool like that. I think that we should be differentiating between what we're using in a depository institution, our banking relationship, from investments. And even if you look at the current investment policy, it says that we have the ability to invest in, for example, treasuries. Treasuries are not an institution located in inside of Ulster County. I understand the economic development argument for banking within Ulster County. I support that. I'm talking about, you know, $100 million extra funding beyond our banking relationship that we should be looking at investments. And I would say investments are a different thing, and I am a socially responsible investor, so I understand that, and I don't think that's inappropriate. However, we don't invest in corporate securities the way that a private investor would do so. We're very limited in what we can invest in. So you definitely have that possibility of screening as you wish.
For the follow-up, is it something that the comptroller's office could do to help us distinguish among the banking institutions that are available to us what their policies are on some of those generally utilized criteria?
I'm sure it's something we could look at.
Sort of related to that question I was going to ask, I think that, you know, considering all three of these things, we need to come up with a policy, and I'm going to take it as this is a Ways and Means purview, and we should be the ones to do it. Would you be willing to help and assist that committee with developing these policies. Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right. So we'll probably schedule some separate meetings aside of the normal business because they don't seem to work out so well sometimes.
Yeah, we look forward to that.
All right. Did we have a motion and a second?
Fabiano, motion, no second.
Okay. Can I have a second for adjournment?
A second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
John, I just turn it on.